So, Richard Arterberry, we talked last time in April. You are one of the co-founders of the Ocean Blue Project, which is an Oregon-based national nonprofit working to save the ocean from removing microplastics. It's a pleasure to have you here and back on
Thank
KBOO.
you.
So could you kind of summarize what are some of the problems that microplastics cause? I feel like we hear a lot about them, but sometimes it's hard to grasp the specifics of the issue.
Totally. Yeah, microplastic is anywhere from like 5 millimeters to, all the way down to 1 millimeter. The main setback or the problem that I'm seeing is if we overlook it and we continue stepping on it, it gets smaller and smaller. It never truly goes away, but it gets so small that you actually can't recover it any longer. And it ends up in the ocean and ends up in our waterways. And the biggest sad part about it is our fish are eating it and other animals that we eat. So as, they eat it and we eat them, I mean, it's getting into humans as well and just causing who knows what kind of issues. And it actually kills wildlife. A lot of the birds, they love the red plastic. I don't know if they think it's food of some sort, but they eat it until they consume it. Their bellies are completely full and they suffer, they die, and they don't know any better. They're just out there having fun eating things.
So you've been doing cleanup projects for how long now?
9 years ago, my son and I founded Ocean Blue Project, and he was 12 years old or 9 years old at the time, and we just did one beach cleanup, and it was kind of overwhelming at a sense of how much our group had recovered. So we kind of just thought, hey, let's just do it on the weekends as a hobby. And then a lot of college students wanted to do cleanups as well, and it never ended. So funding started coming in at a random, and what do you do with funding when you're not a nonprofit? So it was like, oh, let's just do a nonprofit and we'll just keep it a hobby. And the hobby grew into a national nonprofit. And now we're doing like 200 cleanups all over. So it never really slowed down. It just continues growing. So it's kind of exciting.
You've been doing all these cleanups with volunteers, and it sounds like you've also been pioneering some new technologies to remove microplastics from the ocean.
So I guess we kind of got a little antsy and we wanted more impact, and we have all these donors that want us to remove like a pound of plastic for every dollar they donate. So as the donors grow, we have to evolve and grow as well. So we ended up buying our first machine. It's gas operated and it works really well. It's kind of like looks like gold mining equipment, and it sifts sand, keeps the microplastic behind, and it's kind of walk behind. Kind of reminds me of like an old rototiller you would use. So we're wanting to go a little bit larger so we can cover more ground, also do research along with it, since we're able to remove a mass amount of the plastic with machinery. We can actually see what plastic washes in over the next month and see how much plastic is on a beach. So we're going to be working with a bunch of universities, and then we've introduced a machine to Oregon State University, the engineering department, with another engineering firm out of Portland. And what our goal would be is to be a little bit more sustainable, a little bit better for the environment, where we're not using like oil and grease and gas and things to run machines. So we're looking at like maybe a little mini robot machine that would actually do the same thing the larger one does, but maybe it's ran off solar power. And we're thinking of that one for Oregon. And of course, we're going to be using a lot larger one as well. So we ended up getting one machine. Now we have like three machines in the works just to see which one does the best.
Wow. And also, I understand that you're using or you're looking at using fungi to eat some of the microplastics.
We are, yeah. So we've got a foundation that has donated. I'm working with Ken Collins from NASA out of Ames, South California. He does all the DNA side of the research, and our question would be, okay, we know that we can eat plastic with it, but what does it do to the enzymes? Does it harm the enzymes that are actively eating this? What's the long-term effect, and which enzyme or which fungi works the best? And that's really our main goal. So that project kicks off in December, It'll be the rainy season, of course, and then it'll run for the next 5 years. And it's a research project. We'll also be working with the Puget Sound with the county up there. We're going to be doing some biosil research to figure out, how we can make these biosils filter water even better before they dump into the waterways. And that's going to be with Ken Collins as well. And the fungi was, it's been very successful. It's just really hard to really make it simplify everything to where anyone could use it or where we could really set the tone of how things work. We're working with a patent right now with Ken just to kind of show which ones work the best, like using some type of filter bag or some other nature to where cities and government agencies could kind of have a blueprint and saying, hey, one, two, three, this is what you do, and this is how we use it, and this is how we test for it. So with Ken, it's been a blessing because you start playing with DNA, RNA, it gets really complex. I mean, the new computer technology and how we test things is a little bit, it's a lot easier. You're dealing with like millions of different varieties. It's kind of complex, but with computer technology, it's been makes things a lot easier for sure.
I'm curious to know a little bit more about the supply side of microplastics. Are there sources, particularly maybe in Portland, that might be contributing to the problem? And have you seen a change in the amount of microplastics being deposited in the ocean since the COVID pandemic?
Yeah, I'm seeing, of course the face mask is kind of normal. And what we noticed a long time ago, like probably 8 years ago, is most of all of this plastic, and I don't know, 80% at least, is coming from inland. So if you walk down a city street anywhere, probably in the world, and you just look down at the ground, what you're gonna find is litter, and you're gonna find like maybe it's a broken pin, or maybe it's not broken yet, or maybe it's a bottle cap. Well, when we have these intense floods, flash flooding, things like that, especially in Oregon, raining 33 inches just inland, things wash downstream. They wash down the street. They go into a street drain. That street drain could be very well connected straight to a river. So a lot of the stuff that we're seeing on the Oregon coast, like let's for instance, would be a good example would be Manzanita, Oregon. Or even going up further to like Astoria where the Columbia River dumps out into Oregon side, also the Washington side, what you'll find is you're going to find things that are like during duck hunting season, we're going to find a lot of shotgun wads that end up on the beach. Those are typically coming from Columbia River. And so there's definitely evidence, but it's very hard to track it. Like if we could put If we found a bottle cap in the maybe say like Portland City, and we could put a little GPS device on that bottle cap and we just let it be, we could actually track it. And you would find that, not sometimes it gets hung up or it's snagged somewhere, but you could actually prove, hey, this, what we found in this street is actually made it all the way down these rivers into the ocean back on a beach with the waves. So our kind of philosophy came is like, our city streets are only a mirror reflection of the ocean that we're cleaning up. So a lot of people want to clean up, and but we don't live by an ocean. So we're really trying to inspire and get people cleaning up everywhere in the US.
Are there solutions do you think that the city of Portland might be able to implement that could reduce the amount of waste getting dumped into the river?
That's a very good question. Years ago they came up, most all cities came up with like what you would call a street sweeper, which is it helps a lot because they're going along where the city drains are actually, catching or eating or consuming this plastic that ends up on the street. I really think the city of Portland's doing the best they can. I think that our community has the power, and I think that when we open our vehicle door, making sure that we don't have any excess like plastics or film plastics or, if we do drop something, it's really important to grab that and pick it up. I think our recycle facilities all over the world could increase to where there's better incentives. Even myself, like depending on where we are, either we're in Florida or maybe Long Beach, Washington, or even on the northern coast of Oregon, I find it very hard to recycle a lot of what we're getting from the Nehalem Bay or the mouth of the ocean because it's not convenient for me here. If I'm in Corvallis, which is inland where Oregon State University is, where the machines will be designed, it's easy to take a bag and drop it off and recycle your bottles or cans or whatnot, but it doesn't mean we can recycle everything. But on the northern coast, like when I'm in Manzanita, Oregon, there's really no place to drop it off that's convenient. So I think increasing the recycling opportunities is number one. And if we can't recycle it, it's really confusing why we're utilizing it or why we're making it. So, it's almost like we need to do a reset and say, hey, we can't recycle this stuff or less than 3%. And there's lots of different ideas of what's being recycled. When I first started, it was, oh, less than 33% is being recycled. We used to send a lot of stuff to other countries, to China to have things recycled. A lot of that's been shut down. And if we can't recycle it, we shouldn't be using it. And I'm not saying plastic is a horrible thing, because most cars are made out of plastic, but that stuff lasts a very, very long time. The phone that I'm talking on, I'm going to keep it as long as I can, no matter if they tell me it's outdated or not. But there's a lot of plastics, like a coffee shop, for instance, has a plastic lid on it. I mean, most of the time that lid, you get the coffee handed to you, the lid comes off, it goes in the trash, ends up in a landfill. And anything in the landfill has an opportunity to end up somewhere else.
When we talked last in April, you mentioned that recycling had been a big question also for Ocean Blue Project because you had collected all of these microplastics and needed to find a place to keep them or a way to get rid of them. I'm curious to know how that process has been going in the past 7 months.
Oh wow, we have lots of things to think about. So we have one place in the U.S. that wants to utilize the plastic to create energy. Sounds very intriguing to me. Our question now, and the researchers will have to go dig deeper, is when they do incinerate it and they produce electricity, is it contributing to carbon emissions? Is it healthy? Is it bad? So I just really have to be careful what I say yes to. The other thing that we had the big setback with, Head and Shoulders made a shampoo bottle. They were wanting some plastic from everyone. And, the plastic would go from Oregon to New Jersey, then to Europe. So we're removing all this plastic and we've got it recovered, it's safe. It's, no longer going to be consumed and eaten by a bird or a fish or a whale. It really makes it hard for me to let go of it and send it back over an ocean somewhere. I mean, we all know king tides and how the Oregon coast is. It's no joke. I mean, you put a boat out there, it's a huge chance for it to flip over. And so still a little setback. We're still warehousing things. I don't want to feed it the plastic or give it away to a landfill. I feel it's not really a solution. If it goes to a landfill, it costs everyone. If it stays in the ocean, it costs everyone. So the whole dream would be to be able to utilize those plastics to lower the newer plastics being used. I mean, there is stored energy in it. It's kind of a precious resource, but right now it doesn't have a value and we can't sell it, so. But now we're like an egg. I mean, a duck. We're just sitting on eggs and we're just storing it and keeping it. But the main thing is it's being protected and we're not letting go of it.
It's definitely a much better place for it to be.
It is. It is. And, I mean, it would be very beautiful to share with everyone our warehouse one day and let them see all the stored plastic. It's like, it's just evidence of impact that we're actually making.
Richard, thanks so much for talking with me today, coming back on KBOO and talking about your project.
Ah, thanks for having us.